Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 50. I am Chris, as always, joined by Jeff.
Hello.
And tonight we have a pair of slashers from this 78 and 91, I believe. We'll be getting to that shortly. But we watched a lot of stuff over the last month between the two of us. Jeff, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, we could do like a whole fucking podcast on what we've been watching. We could do a whole podcast on what I've been watching, and we'd be here all night. So I'm going to try to cover like as much of it that I think is relevant or like stuff that I really want to recommend. Try not to go too long.
Yeah.
But these are fun. We got some fun things to talk about. I guess I'll start with a few TV shows that I've been watching that I think are worth checking out. They're all three of them are limited series. So just the one season, it's telling one complete story. And I think two of them at least are based off of books. So they're adapting the book and that's it, right? So I don't think there would be a season two unless they do something like Shogun.
Right.
And I want to start off with what I think is, I think this is the best thing I've seen all year. It's called Baby Reindeer. It's on Netflix. And this did get noticed when it came out. It was kind of a hit on Netflix. This show is autobiographical. So it tells the story of a bartender and really bad hack, like wannabe comedian, who starts getting stalked by this lady that comes into his bar. And based off that premise, you think you know the show you're getting in for, like something like, you know, it's like Misery or something like I'm Your Number One Fan type thing. And it's that in part, but it goes just places you would never expect it to go. And the guy that stars in this, Josh Gad, not only stars in it, but he wrote it, and it's about something that happened in his life.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, this lady, the stalking incident, more than an incident, it was went on for months and months. This really happened. Like, that lady's out there. She's a real person. And again, I'm not gonna like spoil some things, but like it'll surprise you with where the story goes. And honestly, like it is astonishing that this guy was willing to admit the things that he admits about himself in the show. Like it is incredibly brave work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like laying bare all the most embarrassing and troubling things about you for the world to see on Netflix. I'm astonished by it. The only thing that makes this like a hard recommend is I think that like the subject matter that it gets into will be like a huge turnoff for some people. But with that one caveat, like, it seems to have done well on Netflix. Like, so it seems like I'm not the only person that really, really liked it. I did have like one coworker check it out, and he too was like, yeah, that was really good. So there you have it. I give Baby Reindeer a big recommend, except again, it might not be everyone's cup of tea.
That Richard Gadd, not Josh. Richard Gadd. Josh Gadd is the Frozen guy.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like Josh Gad, like I need to see it. What's this shit? Like, oh no, different Gad.
My bad. I don't have all the info pulled up in front of me. I'm doing this. I'm winging this. But yeah, that's Baby Reindeer. It's I think like 8 episodes. I would highly recommend it. I think it's worth checking out. I don't know if like I could see some people being like, oh man, what? But yeah, I don't want to like spoil where it goes and stuff. So,
all right.
Another show I've been watching, it feels like nobody's watching, and I think you would really like, Chris. It's called Dark Matter. It's on Apple TV.
So I've read this novel.
Oh, you okay. Yeah. Thank you, because this is really hard to explain. I was like, how do I explain this to Chris in like a sentence or two so he doesn't get lost with what I'm talking about?
I know the basic premise of it, because okay. I mean, I don't know what they changed for the adaption, but I understand.
Well, the idea of this, it's a sci-fi show, which, you know, it's funny because like every show on Apple TV is either sci-fi or about pilots, or it's sci-fi pilots.
Yes.
This is another sci-fi show. It's a multiverse story. Yes. It's about a guy who, God, it's so hard to explain. Basically, I'll do it like the shortest way possible. Like his life gets stolen by another version of himself. So there's a version of him that exists in another reality who is a great physicist who creates a box that gives you access to the multiverse. But that guy in this other world, in order to become so successful, he had to like walk away from his girlfriend who was pregnant. And he always regrets it, and he's wondering about the life that could have been, and he decides to steal it. He decides to find a version of himself who got married to this woman. I just mentioned the main character is played by Joel Edgerton.
Mm-hmm.
The wife is played by, God, I should have fucking pulled up all the shit. Jennifer Connelly.
Okay. Yep.
And so does this sound like the book that you read?
Yeah, yeah, it's, kidnapping, multiverse, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so it's cool, it's like, one guy, our main character, is this professor who's like, the schlubby professor who, not super successful in life, but he's successful in areas that matter, like he's happily married and he has a kid. He's our main character, and he's been abducted and shoved in this other reality. And so, like, half the show is him trying to get back to his actual reality. And then the other half of the show is this imposter version of himself who, like, moves in on his family, like, him trying to navigate a world that he's only imagined and, trying not to let slip that he's not the real Jason, I think his name is.
Right.
I think it's super fun, man. Like, I don't know how well it sticks to the landing or how it ends. You know this better than me, I guess. But so far, I've seen 6 of the 8. I just watched the 6th episode tonight. It just came out. I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
I really like the novel. So if they stick close to that, I think I'll probably really like TV show too. So
yeah, it's really funny that you've read the novel. Yeah, it's cool. And, yeah, if you like sci-fi, it's fun. Like, is it the must-see like show that you need to be watching right now? I don't know, but if you like sci-fi, I think you'd enjoy it. If that premise sounds fun to you, I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah.
Cool. Lastly, I got a show that just dropped on Netflix that my coworker checked out before me, and he fucking like binged it all in one night. I was like, holy shit. And this show is called Eric, and this is a mystery starring Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Benedict Cumberbatch is this dad who his son goes missing, and the show is about, the detective working the case, trying to find out where the son is, as well as the dad trying to do the same thing, but also spiraling completely out of control. He's an alcoholic and a drug addict, and his son going missing definitely affects that. There's more to it too. Like he's like a creator of the show that's like Sesame Street, and as the show goes on, he starts to like see an actual puppet like following him around that he's talking to. It's very jarring at first because you're like in this crazy like mystery show, and then like this guy shows up that looks like he's from fucking Monsters Inc, like the big monster from Monsters Inc, like, and he's like live action, he's not like animated or anything, he's just like a dude in a costume talking to him. It's fucking weird. But all right, just quickly, I finished it last night. I found it to be actually pretty damn good. Like, if you're into mysteries, you'll enjoy this. There is tons of twists and turns in it. And, like, pretty much everyone in the show, and there's a decent amount of characters, at some point, you're going to be like, is that the guy? Is he the killer or the kidnapper? You know what I mean?
Nice.
Like, it gets you to suspect everyone at some point. And where it ends up and where it goes, in some ways, like, I guess, if you've read a lot of mysteries or seen a lot of mysteries, like, parts of it, you'd be like, yeah, like, there are things I called pretty early on, but, you know, it's in line with the genre. And the show layers, like, a certain amount of weirdness on top of that with, like I said, like, he's talking to himself, he's talking to, like, this imaginary monster. I dug it. It's fun. I'd say, like, out of all the shows I'm telling you about right now, I would put it below the other two, but this, you know, if you're looking for a good mystery show, you can't go wrong with it. It's pretty over pretty quick. It's 6 episodes.
Yeah, it sounds cool. Like, 6 episode standalone seems good.
Yeah. And I think all of these were, like, Dark Matter's going to end up being 8. Yeah, like, they're all going to be 6 to 8 episodes, I think.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, Baby Reindeer was like 8 too.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, obviously a little bit of a time investment because these are all TV series, but if you're looking for a show, and I like having a show because then I don't have to think about what I'm watching tonight. I don't have to find another, like, movie. I'm just going to watch the next episode. I have seen some movies, though, and I guess I'll stick to some of the ones I thought were the best I've seen all year.
Okay.
There's ones that you have seen that
we've both seen.
So I'll save that for when you start talking. But I think maybe the best movie I've seen this year is Challengers, which I'm sure you've seen the trailer for.
Yep,
and probably heard of it. Tennis movie.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a tennis movie slash love triangle movie. Another one that would be kind of hard to explain, but it's like, I think some of the joy in it is discovering how it all works and how the love triangle works and how it adds tension to the sports. But it is an actual sports movie too. Like, with, and, you know, like, a sports movie ends in a big, you know, tennis match in this case, and the drama could not be more elevated in this. The finale of this movie, really cool. I guess the impression you might get from the trailer is that it's like a erotic type thing.
Yeah.
It's not really. There's no, like, actual sex scene. Like, the craziest things in the movie are, like, in the trailer. So that's, you know, just, like, heads up. That's not, like, the reason to check it out. The reason to check it out is it tells a really fun, interesting adult story, and it is really, like, stylish and well made, like, well directed. The, you know, like, the action, the sports scenes are really, like, well directed, and the fucking score by Trent Reznor. I don't always love Trent Reznor scores, but this one fucking goes hard. It sounds like a Nine Inch Nails album. It's fucking awesome, especially, like, one song they play in the credits, he's, like, singing on it. It sounds like a Nine Inch Nails song.
Nice.
Big recommend for Challengers. I know it's not, like, available. Well, it's available to rent only, but for, like,
it's like $20.
But I was so hyped to see it and mad I missed it in theaters that I just said, fuck it. And, yeah, it'll be available, you know, soon, I guess, for rent. Yeah. I think it's going to be hitting MGM Plus soon, whatever the fuck.
I don't know what that is, but, like,
I think it's owned by Amazon, so I think it's Amazon trying to do a separate streaming service. It makes no sense.
Fucking annoying, because the Beekeeper, I think, is on MGM Plus as well, and it, like, hit there, but then all of a sudden, like, this MGM Plus thing launched and it was gone off of Prime. Like,
I have to imagine that at some point Challengers will hit Prime too, you know, like,
yeah.
Like, they'll cycle their content through these platforms. Is, I don't get why you have a streaming platform. Why, what are you doing?
I guess you get an extra sub. I don't know. Makes no sense.
Yes. Yeah, I guess.
Like, there's only so many subservices we can join.
It's just, but yeah, Challengers is awesome. I'll be excited to hear what you think about it when you see it.
Okay.
Well, you saw Furiosa as well.
We could talk about that one. I didn't bring that one up on my list because I figured we would talk about that first.
So, going back to Fury Road, I guess, like, I think you and I are both, like, not as wowed by that as, like, everybody else, seemingly. Like, that movie is regarded, you know, it's regarded as a classic now, as one of the best action movies ever made, right?
It's, yeah, and I think I came out of it like, it's a really good action movie. I really liked it.
Yeah.
But that was it.
I remember coming out, like, pretty, like, unimpressed, and it's weird because I've seen the movie now at least another 3 or 4 times, and I've gone from unimpressed to, like, a believer. I think Fury Road's pretty great. But what I think Furiosa does is it really, like, expands on a world that was, like, hinted at in Fury Road and, like, really fleshes it out. Which is normally the type of thing, like, I would find annoying. It's like, I don't need everything explained. I don't need to know how you lost your arm. Like, shit like that. But I felt like, at least the first time I saw Fury Road, I thought it was almost so thin that it was, like, missing some of this stuff. And now you kind of have the best of both worlds. You could just watch Fury Road. Or, if you're interested in more of a story, Furiosa. I think, and I can't wait to do this, the correct way to watch these movies is back to back. Watch Furiosa, followed by Fury Road. I'm excited to do that because to me, it's like Furiosa is the movie leading up to the big finale, which is Fury Road. I think it'll play really well.
Like, Furiosa is the story of the 2-hour chase scene that is Fury Road.
Yeah, and then like. The climax of your movie is Fury Road. Like, I loved it. I really loved it. And I'm not like a huge Mad Max fan. I've seen them all. I don't really like it. I like Mad Max 2. That's probably it. Like, I'm not into the first one. I'm not into the Beyond Thunderdome. But boy, fucking loved what George Miller did with these two movies. And especially this one. Like, I'm in a pretty small camp of people. I think that, like, kind of like Furiosa better. What did you think of this?
I liked it. I did like it. I think it's mostly because of that lore stuff that, you know, you said they add to it. I enjoy the story that they tell here. I think the action is maybe a step down from what's in Fury Road. But there's way more characterization. Like, where, you know, you're learning about Furiosa, you're learning about the society that is set up in the wasteland. And I think that's all fascinating, like the different warlords and how they kind of interact, and Gastown and the Bullet Farm and the Citadel. And
That's all what made me like it more. I like Dementis more than Immortan Joe, because it's more of like a personality, you know, and he's kind of a populist, kind of a scary populist. I dug that.
Yeah, it actually is like really kind of crazy, because like he's this like nutty guy that just says shit that everybody around him wants to hear. But when he actually gets the power and they start looking at him to like maintain, you know, their standard of living, he doesn't have to do it. It just all starts falling apart. It's hysterical, actually.
I wish I could point to something in real life that was.
Yeah, like, I wonder who.
So it's like, and honestly, like, there's not as much action as Fury Road, but I think there's at least two parts in this that like wowed me as much, if not more. The big semi scene in this where there's people flying around with fans on their backs and shit. And there's the part where, like, I think it's at Gastown or Bullet Town, I don't know, like, where, like, she's, like, trying to snipe him, and he shoots a missile at her. Like, that whole part I thought was really fucking awesome.
When she goes back in, because like her friend, her mentor or whatever.
Yeah.
She gets locked on the other side. Yeah, I think it's at the bullet farm.
I think she goes to snipe him and he grabs some other guy and like she ends up like shooting that guy's fucking head off. And then that guy was holding a missile launcher or rocket launcher or whatever, and he shoots it at her and like blows up the whole thing she was standing on. Like, there's less, but like even like when the movie starts and she's a young girl in it, it starts with this awesome like chase through the desert that I just immediately was like, wow, this is like, you know, and it's like on foot, like a foot chase. Or was it, were the guys on bikes?
They're on motorcycles, and like she's on a horse at first.
Yeah.
And it's like her mom is chasing her she's on a horse.
It's unlike
she takes somebody down the bike. It's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Like that whole opening sequence, I thought like you're getting story, and it's just a really fun like kind of action sequence that is completely different than what he's done in his other movies. Anyways, I don't want to go on it too long, I guess, but
it's neat.
I'm a big fan of it, and I can't wait to like own them both so I can watch it as like one movie kind of.
Yeah, it is kind of a shame that it did not do better at the box office.
I know. I don't. What the fuck?
And it's been a weird year for the box office. After last year with Barbie and Oppenheimer really kind of blowing up. Everything's back, but nothing is really taking off this year.
Audiences are so weird and they're so fickle and they're so hard, like impossible to figure out. Like, it's just like, you know. Oh, it seems like they're over the Marvel stuff and people are like wanting more like original content.
You get something like this, which is, you know, it's still a legacy sequel, but like it's new, right? And no, people don't come out for it. It's so weird.
I'd say like, yeah, even though it's like part of like a franchise, it is special enough that this is worth going to the theater for.
Yeah.
And yeah, no, if people didn't turn out, like it is so hard to figure out. Like it must be so frustrating to be like these studio heads or whatever, like trying to figure out like what the fuck works. Nobody knows, dude. It's just like whatever's going to hit is going to hit. I'm sure again. Yeah. It's been a bad year for the box office. Something's going to hit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it weird. Is. Be yeah, something completely be
like,
weird.
Like how did that like,
you know. What else you got?
Hold on. What did I tell you I had? We might've covered most of what I, yeah, you know, I guess I'll mention it feels old now, but it has been since our last episode is the Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, and I mean another one that like that's a big, you know, it's a big sequel to and this new version of Planet of the Apes, very well loved.
Yeah.
This film kind of came and went without any kind of fanfare, even less than Furiosa.
It's weird. It made money though. I think it made more money than Furiosa. But yeah, it's just like it just feels like. Well, I think a lot of people thought it was a downgrade from the trilogy that just happened.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And like I could see where they're coming from. When we went to go see it, we went out to eat beforehand. So like when I'm sitting down in the theater, I'm like three drinks deep and. I was like falling asleep in the first half hour of this because it's so much like setting up because it's been like hundreds of years now since Caesar. Mm-hmm. And like, so it's like, you're basically setting up a whole new world and you know, you're with this clan of fucking apes that like train falcons and shit. And you're like, what the fuck is all this? I think once it got going though, like again, do I love it as much as all the other like recent ones? No, but by the end I was intrigued enough with where it was going that like depending on how good the follow-ups to this are, I'm on board. Like they could fuck it up somehow because it's unclear like whose side you're supposed to be on or what the movie thinks of, like, you know, there's some humans still left.
Mm-hmm.
Left and they're supposed to be on, like, it's unclear if the movie thinks that the humans should be successful and what they're doing. I don't know. Again, it all depends on like where it goes after this first one, but I was intrigued by it enough that if this is part of like a new trilogy that goes well, then it's a good movie. If the trilogy falls apart, then fuck all these new ones. But I liked it enough. It was cool. You haven't seen it, right?
I have not seen it. I mean, I probably will catch it when it, you know, hits rental or whatever. I like those other three.
Yeah.
I would watch another one.
Yeah. I rewatched the three, and yeah, those movies are awesome. And I kind of now, because there's a lot of people doing this now, because I think they're all on Hulu. I kind of want to dig through
the old ones.
Yeah, I've only seen the original. I haven't seen any of the sequels. I hear people talking about the sequels. I'm like, man, that sounds awesome. That sounds fucking crazy. Have you seen the old ones?
No, I mean, I saw the original one like you did, and I've seen, is it the Tim Burton one?
Oh, yeah, well, that one fucking, yeah, no. I'm talking like, yeah, the old school, like,
yeah.
The sequels to the original one sound nuts. Like, there's one that's like a prison movie. There's one that is set in like 1970s. There's one that's set in the 90s. Like, we're going through time and shit. Like,
that's neat. Yeah, yeah. I've never dug into them. Like,
I heard they're wild. And you know, maybe not all great movies, but there's something like really cool about each one of them, is from what I've heard from people that are watching them.
Okay.
I'll shut up there, because we're going to have a bunch more stuff to talk about that I've also seen, I'm sure. So.
Yeah, so I guess let's kick it off with, I'll just, you know, kind of like how I saw these. I went and saw The Strangers, Chapter okay. 1, which is a reboot of The Strangers. There were a pair of those movies previously, which we both liked. I think we both liked them. In fact, the second one, I think you really enjoyed.
Yeah,
that one.
I'm the weird person that, like, yeah, Strangers is cool, but Strangers 2, Pray at Night, whatever. Fucking.
And I
think it's a great slasher.
I think I agree with you on that one, but just because, like, the setting is cool. It's like that trailer park. And and the first one is just in the house. Like,
yeah, like,
get a little more variety.
I also think that, like, having it be a family that's attacked in the sequel was better than just like this couple. It's like generic. Yeah, couple.
So that's what this. And I don't know where this is gonna go. It's very weird. Rennie Harlan.
So weird.
Yeah, he directed.
Why?
This.
What is this? It's so like, what they're gonna do a trilogy of these, right?
Yes, that's what's weird about this, right? So this is The Strangers Chapter 1, and it's a complete reboot of everything. It's like the killers are still like, they're the same killers. Like, I think they have names. I don't remember. Yeah, but they have those masks. Those, they're not iconic because there's only two movies. But, like, you know, like, if you've seen The Strangers, you know the killers. You know the masks and what they look like. And this is very much just kind of like a repeat of that original movie, where it's a couple. They're in a cabin. You know, they're being stalked and kind of played with by these killers right up until the end. It's a pretty standard slasher. I think it's okay for the most part, like, but only having, you know, the couple, that's it. Like, so there's only so many people you can kill. There's only so many people you can torture. That,
yeah, and there's less dynamics going on. Yeah. Like, I remember, like, the family was all kind of like, they all have certain things going on. They're upset with each other. Yeah, like, and just a couple. Like, okay. Like,
yeah.
There's nothing. There was, in the original, there was, like, nothing going on with them or anything. It's just, like, I think they were in their house, though, in the original, right? Like, it wasn't, like, a cabin.
Yeah, they were just in
their home, and
these people, they ended up having to get like a they get hungry on the road. They're on a road trip to Portland or something, and they get hungry, so they stop in this small town that's off the highway, and their car breaks down. They can't get it fixed, so they end up getting like an Airbnb like 40 minutes away from town. It's out in the middle of the woods, and then, you know, weird shit starts happening. Like, somebody keeps knocking on the door and asking for somebody that, you know, clearly not there because it's an Airbnb. The one guy, he's like, oh, I need to go back in because my inhaler is, you know, it's in the car. So he takes like an old motorcycle and drives away. So then like that just sets it up with like weird creaky noises, and you see people in the house, but like they're not like fucking with her yet. And then they start like more abjectly fucking with her, but not like hurting her, like just like, you know, scaring her to the point when her boyfriend shows up. It's like, oh shit, what happened? And he thinks that she's going crazy. She thinks she's going crazy, and there's no one actually around when they're all actually in the house. And there's some good tension in it, I think. And then once they do really start fucking with them, you know, they're running around out in the woods a little bit. But again, like the violence just isn't there, and it's just this kind of like stalking. It's just it's a stalking show until it gets really fucking goofy, and something happens at the end where, you know, one of the people survives, so they're setting it up for The Strangers Chapter 2, and there's a mid-credit sequence that is just stupid, and I was like, this is really, really dumb. Not a fan of that, and I don't know how they're gonna continue on with this. I think maybe they should have just, hey, you could have done The Strangers, and it just be those three killers again, just...
Yeah, what if you just did Strangers 3?
Right, and it's like they're just killing random people. Like, it doesn't have to be a continuous storyline, which is what they're going to do with this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's down. But like, if you're looking for a decent enough, you know, I don't know how decent it is. It's I didn't hate it, but I was like, this isn't like anything great. But I wasn't like, I'm going to walk out of this. Like, it was fine. Like, I guess if it hits Netflix, maybe watch it.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested to see it because I am a fan of The Strangers, but I'm like, I was hopeful for this too. I'm like, that's crazy. They're going to do a trilogy of Strangers movies, and they're all coming out within like a year. Like, they're all going to, they're all shot and everything. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, and then Renny Harlin directing it. I was like, what the, like, none of it makes sense to me, but I also was, I like The Strangers, and I'll give it a shot. And I am planning to see it, as, you know, as soon as it's like a regular rental price.
Yeah, so Chapter 2 evidently coming sometime this year.
Yeah. So. And, but for you, which you just heard what Chris said about this, you are probably the most favorable review I have heard of for this movie.
Oh, really?
Oh man, there were people on Twitter trashing it the day it came out, just being like, yeah, that's a front runner for fucking worst movie of the year right there. And then like a lot of people in like horror groups and stuff that I'm in are just like, okay, you just did like a retread of the original, but not as good. So like, what the fuck was that?
I mean, I would agree with that. I'm just not as down on it, I guess, as them. Like, it's
just kind of fine.
It's fine. Yeah. I've seen, and that's, I often wonder when people are like, it's the worst thing I've ever seen. Like, have you seen a bad movie? Like, I've seen bad movies. I know what bad movies are. This is fine. It's serviceable. It's not hype. Like, I'm not getting hyperbolic over it. Like, it's not garbage. Like, we've seen garbage. We know what garbage
is. We've reviewed worse.
All right. Well, so, I mean, take my word with a grain of salt then, because this next movie is one that I saw a lot of people hyping up before I went and saw it on a Friday, I think. It's a film called In a Violent Nature. The guy, I saw people claiming this like the greatest thing ever in slashers, and
a lot of critics.
Yeah,
it has good reviews.
I'm loving it.
I will tell you what I have seen and heard, but yeah, critic wise, like review wise, it's surprisingly high for a slasher. It's like in the 90s or something, like on Rotten Tomatoes.
So conceptually, what this film is like, it's the way I describe it is reverse Friday the 13th, part 2. So like, you know, kids out in the woods. And a like an undead killer that, you know, singularly focused on killing. But it's told from the reverse angle. So you're seeing it from Jason, or I think his name is Johnny in this. Like, you're seeing it from his perspective. Like, you're following behind him. You are seeing it from the perspective of the killer, not from the victims, which is normally how it's done. Problem with that is that, especially with a killer like Jason or Johnny in this, there is no character. They're not a character. They're just a murderous thing. There's no story to them. There's no dialogue. So all you're getting is like some exposition that you're hearing from the background, like where Johnny's stalking them. He's just like waiting for an opportunity.
About the legend.
Yes. It's like that. That's how you learn about it. Like, hey, did you hear about the legend of like the blah, blah, blah massacre or whatever? And it's like, that's the story. Like, and you don't really get to know the characters, and that's part of the fun of a movie like Friday the 13th is, like, yeah, they're stereotypes, but, like, you know, you're seeing them interact with each other, and you know, they're having fun, and then, like, out of nowhere, Jason, like, kills them.
This is a point that's going to come up in one of our reviews tonight.
Yeah.
I'll get to that at some point.
I did not like this movie. I found it boring. There are some kills in it that are fucking grotesque. One in particular that is like maybe one of the most foul things I've ever seen it a slasher film do. But I didn't care for any of it. Like, it's so dull. It's just, you know, really just watching him walk from kill to kill, and then for no particular reason, the last 20 minutes of this film switch from the perspective of Johnny, the killer, to the final girl as she's running away. And it's just 20 minutes from her perspective. And I understand why they did it. I just don't think it works. And it's,
I had not heard that. That's interesting.
I think, like, if you watch it, you'll understand like why they change it. 'Cause like there's a final shot that kind of like lays out why, and if you've been following along with the only dialogue they've been given, which is like, hey, we're gonna lay out what the legend is. Oh, and then like the ranger is gonna lay out more of the legend. He's gonna give you the true version of it, and this is how you kind of like put Johnny's soul at rest. And so like you understand why Johnny stops the stalking. But it's so dull. And I was not the only, like, there were people
audibly.
Yeah. Somebody walked out before it even ended. Like the killing had stopped. It was in that 20 minute sequence at the end. They just walked out 10 minutes into that. We're just like, fuck this. Like, they didn't even care how it ended at that point. They just walked. The people behind me in the theater, like, they were like, that was boring. Like, I didn't like it. I was actually like I came out super disappointed, because like I had seen that critics were like, yeah, this is so awesome.
Well, it's the same thing as like Skinamarink that got great reviews, and that was just like not even a movie. Like, it was just like staring at walls and hallways for fucking 90 minutes. I'm like,
yeah,
how did this, like, I don't know. Again, I didn't hate Skinamarink, because I got what it was going for. It's fine. I actually did try to rewatch it one time. I'm like, oh my god, this is dreadful. but look, I'm happy that we're getting some like experimental horror, like Skinamarink and this. But you know, just to let you know, Chris, from what I've seen in the, there's people in the horror community that, just like Skinamarink, there's people in the horror community that really liked it. But the general vibe I got from people who are keeping it real is that it is boring as fuck, and it's him walking around for like the whole fucking movie. There's already like memes making fun of like part two. It's him walking from like the East Coast to the West Coast. I check it out, because I'm curious. It's going to be on Shudder soon, but
yeah, it was hectic. A Shudder movie. I was like, fuck, like I saw that when, because you know, if you've ever seen one of those Shudder movies, you'll get that like
yeah,
Shudder original, and I was like, fuck, I could have waited for this. Like,
Oh, you didn't even know that?
No, I just went. I was just like, oh, it's playing at my theater. That's cool. Like,
yeah.
This is all. It's all. You know, it's not going to get a super wide release. I'm gonna go see it.
And it might play better at home. You could be like, fuck around on Switch or something. And you
know. Yeah, look up when the kills are happening.
Yes. So, I will check it out when it comes. I'm curious, but like, it's kind of like what you said is exactly what I've heard. And so, like, I'm going in with pretty low expectations of this. I'm just hoping to see a cool kill or two and maybe see if this guy's got some filmmaking chops. But, like, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. It's weird to think that some critics will go for, though. If it's something's different, I don't know. It's like, I would never in a million years. Like, Skidamarink makes more sense that critics like to be than this, because this is just a slasher, but you're just following the killer around.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of sounds like the idea until you try to execute it, because, like, what the fuck is this movie then? Like, you're just watching a dude walk around and kill people.
Yep. And then, like, the people that do act are not good in it. Like, the dialogue is delivered really bad.
Oh, I heard that as well, yeah. We're wondering if that's intentional or not.
I was just like, the thing is with something like Friday the 13th part 2, like, it's a fun movie.
Yeah,
there's just no fun here. Like, I think it's on purpose, but I don't think it works.
Interesting as art, but
yeah. All right, so real quick, the last two here that I've seen, I think you've seen both of these as well. The First Omen.
Yeah.
That
feels like a fever dream, though. Like, I think I was a little buzzed watching it, but I just kept feeling like, what the fuck is this? But
it's a weird thing. I don't love the Omen franchise, which is weird, because, like, I do like, you know, religious horror that fucks with the Catholic Church and...
Yeah, you're a resident religious horror guy.
Like, yeah, that's and like, I've never really liked the Omen stuff. Like, they're fine. I just don't love them. And I don't love this one, but I liked it. It's neat.
Yeah, like
it is a prequel to the Omen. It is the birth of Damien, I guess. And it tells how, like, Damien came to be. they go some, like... It is still has that vibe of the Omen, still has kind of, like, you know, a little bit of a slow burn, but they do some weird shit in this. And there is a scene, there's a birth scene that is
nightmarish. I mentioned this in my review too. I was wondering the scene you were talking about. I figured it was the one.
Dude, that is me. That is fuck. Like,
I've only seen people give birth in, like, I've seen videos of, like, women giving birth, and it's like, whoa, that's crazy. But, like, I did not expect to see how graphically they show that in this. Like, I
was yeah,
like, geez, like, I am watching the vagina.
Yep. And that's not a baby. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Hell, that is, like, and it's brief, but man, that scene, that imagery will stick with you. Like, they do some really good stuff with imagery. In this, there's a kill where this guy that this nun met in a club, he's like trying to get away from her, and he ends up getting hit by a car, and she's like, worked up,
And
they, like, she, like, looks like she's helping him, except his legs are pinned, so she's really just pulling him apart, and they don't know it. Like, she's hugging him and, like, you're gonna be okay, and then people just start screaming and they pull back.
She's just carrying around the top half of him.
Fucking crazy. I think it's really well done. They do some really good stuff in this, like, way better than I think that I've ever seen in an Omen movie. And they tie it right in. It ties directly into this is the First Omen, but ties into the original Omen, like, right into that story of the American, I think it's like the ambassador, his wife got pregnant, they switch the babies, Damien is is the child that they take home. Damien is the one that is birthed in this movie, and they lay out some like cool lore stuff. I enjoyed it. I don't love it, but I thought it was worth watching.
Yeah, I'm like 100% with you on this movie, but I just thought for like this studio legacy prequel thing, I thought it was like it like let its freak flag fly in a way that like was genuinely surprising. Like I could not believe the stuff that they kind of get away with, like just the level of weirdness that they were allowed with it. And other thing you mentioned, go ahead.
And it's like as I said, it's a movie that it feels like it fits within the Omen, but you're 100% right. Like it is way freakier than anything that is in the rest of that series. Now, granted, those movies were from like what, the 70s and 80s, but
the other thing that like you touched on near the end of your thoughts on this reminded me of something I really love about Furiosa that I didn't mention is the way that it like backs right up to Fury Road. Like, it kind of ends like the final shot of Furiosa is like it's Fury Road, and then there's the credits. It just reminds me, it's like reverse Halloween 2, you know what I mean? Where it's like Halloween 2 picks up right where Halloween 1 left off. It's like we're doing that where we're going right up to the moment of when the next movie's going to start. So I just love, like, that was something that sent me out of Furiosa, like, beaming. I was just like, this is so cool. Like, I love that they did that. Yeah, I've heard people say they don't like that, but it's cool. I like when they, like, kind of, you could see them connecting. Anyways.
And finally.
Yeah.
I watched the biggest box office success of the year, Dune Part 2.
I watched that as well.
And oh boy, what the fuck is Dune, man? This is a fucking weird movie. I don't think I like it.
We're not Dune heads, right? Like, you're not a Dune head.
I've never read the books, and I don't really know. And I think that's the big problem with this is there's a lot going on, which they set up in that first movie, and they maybe it pays off for people that understand what's going on in the world of Dune, but I don't think they explain it very well in Dune Part 2. There's like way too many factions, there's way too much stuff going on, and it's this weird messiah storyline. It's fine. It's a very visually arresting movie. I think it's a beautiful looking movie.
They're good looking movies. I just felt like I was just like learning world building shit the entire time for two movies, and I'm not invested in what I should be, which is the story.
Like, yeah, the story and the characters I don't care about.
Like, all right, so this is a tweet I put out while I was watching Dune Part 2. I said, I feel like I'm in some insane school. There are way too many things to learn. Sucking water out of bodies, prophecies, sand walking, wind traps, reverend mothers, poison transmutations, or whatever the fuck. What the fuck is all this shit? So, like, the whole movie, it's like you're in some sort of, like, insane classroom, like, learning about, oh, this does this, and this these worms do this, and this guy does this. But it's like, I'm never, like, just into the story or the characters.
Yeah, like, so, why should I be invested in Paul, like, who's the messiah character here? Like, why should I be invested in him? Like, why do we care?
He's lame. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I feel like I'm done with this because I've put 5 hours now or whatever into watching these two movies. Grant, again, it's something I'm completely new to it. I didn't know nothing about Dune. And I just, these two turned me off from ever coming back because they are going to do a 3, I think. I'm good.
That's what I hear, yeah.
I'm good. I'm happy it's there for people that like really enjoy these books, but like it's just too fucking boring, man. Like, cool to look at, and there is some like cool ideas inside of it, like just like little like sci-fi ideas that they throw out. Like, you're just like, okay, that's cool, but like I'm just not invested in anything that's happening.
I think, like,
not for me.
I've really thought that the first one, like, you know, the imagery and stuff in that is, like, really cool, and, like, you're seeing the little wick wasp helicopter things.
Yeah, for the
first time, and, like, all that stuff's, like, really neat. It's like, all right, well, maybe they'll pay off here. And it's like, no, not really. Like, hey, there's giant worms and you can ride them. That's cool, right? Like, kind of, but
people fucking hyped up the worm scenes. Like, I don't know, dude.
They weren't as good as, like, anything from the first movie, I don't think.
They weren't anything. Like, I don't understand. Like, I heard that hyped up in so many reviews. Oh my God, fucking, when he rides the fucking worm, I'm like, then I'm watching, I'm like, okay. Like, I don't know what I'm missing here. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, will I watch a third movie? Probably. Just
you're committed now.
Fucking goes. Like, hey, does it finally make sense to me? Or do I really need to, like, invest in these books, which I don't think I want to?
I feel like I've given this series a fair shake. And they're competent, very assured, like, self-assured, like, well-made movies. But I just...
Yeah.
I just... I'm happy for people that like them. I'm out, dude.
Yeah, it does seem like people that are, like, that know
they're into it.
Invested in it. Like, they're in... Like, they love it. They think it's awesome. Yeah. It's like, I don't know anything about Dune. And, like, here's my comparison, right? It's Lord of the Rings. You can go in and watch The Fellowship of the Ring and The Two Towers. And, like, you can kind of understand what's happening because, like, it's all laid out. And, like, there's a story and there's characters and you understand the mission. And it's like, I'm not sure what the end game is here because they're going to make a third. But, like, he killed the Emperor, or the Emperor has given up the throne because, like, he beat the Emperor's champion. It's like, I think maybe this would have played better as, like, a Game of Thrones TV show type thing.
Maybe, yeah.
Where you could just spend more time, like, laying everything out.
But it's just maybe, but also you can't do it as plotting as this is. It's just so... Yeah. I think I said in my letterbox, it has no pulse. It's just like... It's all, like, learning. It's all just like...
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like... I should be enjoying the story as I'm learning what this world is, but it's all just like, it's like sitting on a lecture. Like, this is what this does. This is what this device does. This is who this guy is. This is what they're trying to do. But it's just, you know what I mean? Like that. And that's like the tenor of the movie. It's like, I followed everything that's happening. But like, if you're asking me to care, you didn't like accomplish that because I just don't care. This is not.
Yep, I totally agreed. So that's our box office champion of the year, Dune Part 2.
God bless.
I'm glad people liked it because nobody's going to see anything else this year. That brings us to our double feature, our main course here. The Toolbox Murders from 1978 and 2004's Toolbox Murders, not The Toolbox Murders, although I guess sometimes they do call it The Toolbox Murders as well. Yeah. But it was originally called Toolbox Murders, and that one's by Tobe Hooper in 2004. We're going to kick it off with 1978, the original one here. I think we need to kind of set the stage before we talk about Tobe Hooper's version.
Okay.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child.
My dad almost saw the guy.
Something terrible happens and really stops everything for you.
Anything strange ever happen in here?
Strange?
My neighborhood is the target of some maniac and my sister's been kidnapped.
Look, Joey, we got four violent bloody murders and a possible kidnapping. I mean, it's possible, but it doesn't make sense.
He got her with a nail gun.
I mean, we got three apartments, one forced entry.
What if he didn't con his way in? What if he didn't have to?
The Bible says, if one of thy members offend thee, cut it off. Cut it off!
He killed her with a drill.
So I cut him. I did it. I cut all the evil out.
Carolina in the morning. Don't you know I'm coming?
I gotta protect my family.
Yes, I'll be there in the morning. Don't you know I'm coming home?
Suffering. 1978, directed by Dennis Donnelly. Minimal, had a budget of $165,000, made about $500,000 at the box office. I don't think people loved it at the time, although it was kind of. It got some notoriety. It was a band in the UK during their whole like video nasty type thing.
Yes,
and they were all getting panicked there. So,
also,
and, go ahead.
Did you catch what's the movie? Not the real life incident, because like I said, there's a real life incident, but like what made them decide to make the movie? Because I find it kind of funny.
No.
The producer saw the success of Texas Chainsaw Massacre and was like, let's do a cheap horror movie. And what's funny about that is that Tobe Hooper would end up remaking
it. Yeah, yeah. So there's a neat, neat tie there, right?
Yeah. Like
they he goes and remakes, which I can't wait to get to that
version
of this, because wow. But yes. So yes, this is it's a slasher. It's right at the beginning of like the slasher genre really taking off. I don't know exactly when this. I think it probably hit maybe right before Halloween.
Yeah, I mean same year, but
yeah, but it's
hard to pin down because like movies then like Halloween even would like travel around, so it was in the theaters for over a year. But like in different regions, because I don't know if you know this, but this is something I just learned. I always wondered why it was like that back in the day. I just learned this from Joe Bob. It was to reduce the number of prints of the movie they had to make, because that's very expensive.
That's like, that it makes sense.
Your budget. So you make 100 prints instead of 3,000. You just travel it around the country for a year and let the, you know, let it, the reputation build, and it was an interesting model that they had back then.
As you kind of alluded to previously, like the screenplay for this was loosely based on actual serial killing that happened in Minnesota, where a man was attacking women using tools out of a toolbox. And that's where the name from this comes, is the killer is he kills people with tools, screwdrivers, nail guns, hammers, just anything that you would have in a toolbox. This is a weird, weird fucking movie, because I think the first half hour is really just murder scenes.
Yeah.
There's no story. It's just murder after murder. I think
it
maybe...
is. Well, that's what I thought of when you were talking about In a Violent Nature, where I was like,
yeah,
it's just it's kind of similar. It's just like you're just following around a killer. Like there's no context. Like you don't know who these characters, like they're maybe briefly set up as characters and then just immediately killed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we don't really like. And that's the thing, right? I think that the first murder here is like this lady who's drunk, and she thinks that the guy that is in her apartment just shows up in her apartment. She doesn't let him in. He's just in it. It's like, oh, you're here to fix my bathroom or whatever. And she goes and gets a drink. She's obviously inebriated. And then he murders her. And there doesn't seem to be any tie to any of the people he's killing. Like, why? Like, he's just murdering people. You don't even really get a sense that they're in the same apartment complex until maybe a few kills in.
I only knew that because, like, I'd read, like, the synopsis on, like, Letterboxd or something, like, oh, people in an apartment building are getting killed.
So he's killing these women. That's all, like, he's only killing women. Looks like, you know, he looks in on, there's at one point he looks in on, there's like a couple and they're like talking with each other, but then he like backs out. He doesn't attack them. So it's like single women. That's it. That seems to be who he's going after. And at some point they do kind of like, it slows down and we start to get the police involved. You start to get a little bit more of, like, you know, understanding what's happening. And then finally, like, the characters start showing up. You get a, you know, this brother of the last victim that she goes missing. And in fact, so you get her brother, you get the police involved. You get like this handyman that's around the apartment building. So you start to get some characterization. You start to get to piece some stuff together, and then they just go flat out and show you the girl tied up in a bed.
There's very little like time between, like, oh, who might be the killer?
Yeah, and like, this is the killer.
There was
like,
even less for me because I was watching with subtitles on. Do you watch with subtitles?
Sometimes. I was not with this. Okay.
So with this, in like one of the very first kills in the movie, as he's like killing somebody, he like screams or something, and it says Vance screams. I'm like, oh, you just told me the killer's name, and so I had to look. I'm like, oh, who's Vance? Oh, the guy that owns the fucking. He's the guy that owns the building, right? Like,
wow. So
it'll
spoil it for you.
Scooby on spoiling the. I mean, again, it's not much of a spoiler because, like you said, once we settle into the story, like, this movie does. Like, I have so many notes that says, like, there's no story here. What, you know, no story. Oh, I guess we do have a story. Like, not, oh, we do have characters. These are, like, half my notes on this movie.
It takes a while to get there, though. Like,
it's... No, like, at least a half hour. Like, yeah. And once they do, though, like, it immediately tells you who the killer is.
Yep.
And now it's just kind of this weird psychological, like, it almost switches genres from, like, you know what I think it is? It's oddly structured, because you could kind of make this work as, like, a slasher, because it has all the elements, but it's like they stacked everything at the top. You know what I mean? Like, everything's at the beginning.
Yeah, if things had kind of been paced out where it's like he's slowly killing people in the apartment building.
And then eventually you find out who it is. You know, like, it's a little bit of who is doing this in the building. And
right.
You space out these kills throughout the movie, I think you have something.
Yeah, instead all the kills are front-loaded, and then you get an hour's worth of story, but it's, like, told very quickly, and it's paced very weirdly. And they kind of got to shove everything at us to get to the ending. And so, like, you know, Joey, who is the brother, he's kind of like, I'm going to find out who did this because the cops aren't being, like, all of a sudden, like, he's a fucking detective and he starts meeting up with people that he knows, like, oh, there's this other kid, Kent. He, you know, he's the owner's nephew or whatever.
Yeah.
He kind of like helps clean up some shit. And they start talking and like, you start getting some pieces of like, hey, you know, we know Vance is the serial killer, but you start getting information about how, like, you know, his daughter died and, She was killed in a car accident, and he's been a little weird since then. And then you get, like, Vance just spews all this shit out. Like, he...
This long scene...
yes.
With him and the girl that he's decided to not kill for whatever reason. Okay, I guess she reminds him of his daughter.
Yeah, Lori reminds him of Kathy, and he's, like, dressed her up as Kathy, and...
It just goes on. This scene is, like, so long, and it thinks it's more menacing than it is, because I'm just like, okay, I don't know, like, yeah, it seems like this should feel, like, very high tension, and, like, you're scared about what's going to happen, and instead it just feels like them dumping the whole story into
this scene. Yes, that's exactly what is happening here. Yeah. Vance is just, like, he's laying out his motivations for everything, like, and, you know, all these other women are they're sluts and they're bad people. They're all going to hell. And like Kathy she was pristine and she was perfect. There was nothing wrong with her. And he needed to. That's why he kidnapped Lori, because she was also perfect and wanted to save her before she could be turned like these other women. And yet they just lay all that information out, and it's so weird. And then there's a twist that I don't know. I did not see coming. Kent, who is the nephew, he's the one cleaning up. He's kind of like the handyman around the,
and he's been helping like our main character finally, to try to solve.
And they've been like figuring shit out, and it kind of comes down to, hey, shit, it seems like Vance might be the killer, Kent. And Kent then reveals he's fucking insane and murders Joey and lights him on fire. And then go ahead.
The lighting on fire.
Yeah.
Like he's chasing him around this apartment or whatever. He like threw like gas on him or something, right?
Yes. Like something. Like, I don't know why it was like that either. It made no sense.
But he's like chasing, like this scene is one character chasing another character with matches. Like it's so weird. He's like throwing matches at and the dude just stands there like, please don't do this. Like, hey, how about you just fucking leave? Like, the odds of him throwing the match and this is going to work are probably slim, but like, just get the fuck out of there anyway. Like, I don't know. It was comical.
Stop running around the room. Like, all right, he threw a match at you. It didn't work. Attack him. Like, something, anything. Just, like, I'm going to run to the other side so you can light another match.
It's like someone, like, trying to kill you with, like, a fucking, like, bubble blower or something. We're just like, why don't you just walk away? What are you doing, dude? Like, or tackle the guy. Like, it was... I don't know why it like cracked me up so much that this dude is like threateningly holding matches and like I get it. If it catches fire, you're fucked. But like, I don't know. It cracked me up, man.
The whole time, like Kent's like, I gotta protect my family. Like, what is going on here? And then Kent then kind of goes to Vance. And I guess he pisses off his uncle by saying that he fucked his cousin, which enrages Vance and like, oh no, my wonderful perfect daughter wasn't perfect, and they end up fighting. It's like the whole time as we said, like Lori is in Vance's mind, like his reality is like kind of like fucked. He thinks sometimes that she's his actual daughter.
Yeah.
And then oh, like, you know, he kills Vance and goes and sees Lori, and Kent's like, hey, you're safe. And then it's like implied that, I don't even think it's implied, I think he rapes her.
This is my notes too. I said, then he tries to rape her, or I guess he does.
Because like it's like, I think he
raped her.
Because then like the next scene is like they're both in the bed and she like reaches for the scissors and stabs him. It's fucking weird. It's a fucking weird movie, man.
There's also like a weird like So we don't, like, we have to assume that she killed him with the scissors because we don't see it.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's, like, she's, like, walking out. It's, like, a weird, like, end movie thing where it's, like, what happened now or whatever. And it's, like, this was a true story. And, you know, she spent time in a mental institution. She's now married. It's, like, it's so weird. Like, what?
I did not see that part because I think I had a... I shut it off when I saw her walking through, and like I guess the first part
right there,
of it,
right? Like that, you know, right? Yeah. You know, like where are they now? This type of thing. Like,
I think I must have just like immediately been like, all right, well, I'm
done. I finished.
Yeah, we've hit that text. Iconic, that you know, that stereotypical slasher movie ending where the girl is the victim is walking away, except like there's no Leatherface. There's no, you know, nobody's going to chase after her. This wasn't a supernatural film. So she's just walking. Yep, I'm done. Shut her off. So
like, that's funny.
Yeah, I am like, I had heard like, oh, this is a cult classic. And I did not like this movie.
No,
I think it was very good. I think you're 100% correct in the way it's the structure of it. If they base those murders out throughout the, maybe like kidnap Lori at the beginning. So, you know, she's missing. And then these other ones are ending up dead. And like, we're getting pieces of like his delusion.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Like a pretty decent early slasher. Like,
yeah,
it has all the elements of what like those early slashers were. But it's just, it is, like, that's my thing, it's as you said, front-loaded. Like, it puts everything at the top, and then it's just, like, sorting out stuff after that.
Yeah.
And then it becomes boring, because you're just like, you know, I've seen a million slashers like this, and like, none of the shit that they try, like, I don't know, like... I was going to say I've seen it done a million times better. I've just seen it a million times, like in other slashers, that I would prefer to this. So
yeah, and it's not like, oh, this is like, you know, we've watched like, you know, some of the Gallo stuff and like, oh, like, you know, I see where the genre went from this. Like, this doesn't seem like this had any impact on the genre, really. Like a lot of the notes are there, but coming out at the same time as Halloween, that same year, like, you know, that is clearly the one that everybody took the inspiration from. Like, this is just a film that happened to be that same year.
And I think just for me, there are a lot of garbage slashers that are more fun than this. So
yeah. That's it. This isn't fun. And it could have been. It could have been fun. It could have been interesting. It just doesn't piece it together.
Like, they just showed one on Last Drive-In called Graduation Day. So obviously it's post Halloween one, and you know, we're doing a different holiday or whatever. And it's you know, the writing and stuff is not much better than this, but it's still, it has something more that's like interesting about it than this. Like, this is just like, eh.
Yeah. So Toolbox Murders, Jeff. What's your rating for this?
I went back and forth, but I just don't like it. I think it could have been better. I'm giving it a 4. Like, if you re-edit this, you could maybe make it a 5 or 6, but it's a 4.
Yeah, that's the exact same score I'm at. It's a 4. There's not enough here to elevate it, like.
It does go pretty hard with the kills early on for the year it came out. Like, the kills are more gruesome than Halloween. But,
yes.
That's
more inventive, right? He's using different weapons. And, yeah. Not weapons, but different tools to kill people. And, like, some of that stuff's neat. You know, it's not grisly by any stretch, but it's at least varies a little bit.
Yep.
So that's the Toolbox Murders from 1978. Now we're jumping forward. Let's see, 26 years to 2004, where Toby Hooper, who you mentioned has a connection to the original movie in a way. Like the original movie was inspired by Texas Chainsaw. He directs this Toolbox Murders, a remake of that original film that goes straight to video. I guess it plays some like a horror fest or whatever,
but mm-hmm.
doesn't get like a real theatrical release. And yeah, so that's where we're at. He remade the Toolbox Murders with Toolbox Murders.
The Master is back. From Tobe Hooper, director of the classic Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Poltergeist, comes an all-new journey into the realm of horror.
The walls listen.
Toolbox Murders. And when the toolbox opens...
Oh, gosh! It just feels wrong here.
The terror...
It's about what's already here.
...begins.
Each floor is missing the same apartment.
Because someone's gonna get hammered... Nailed and drilled, and nobody knows who's next. Toolbox Murders. If you lived here, you'd be dead by now.
Yeah, this movie's nothing like that original film at all.
It has it's a guy doing toolbox murder.
Sure, I get
in an apartment building.
Yes,
they took that piece. Yeah, yeah.
Except instead of like having some weird like. Some weird dude that is the guy who owns the apartment and like tying it into like something that you could classify as real life trauma. Instead, like he recreates Leatherface in a way that has him living in the walls of this apartment building. We'll get to that, I guess, though. This film is weird, man. Like the other one was weird and bad, and I think this one's also weird and bad, but just in a very, very different way. Immediately we get characters, so we're getting some story early on.
It's like you're following my notes. My very first note is we have characters this time. That's my first note.
I mean, we do, right? Like immediately there's characters. We're getting introduced to some people that are coming into the apartment. They're moving in. And in doing so, like we're starting to meet some of the neighbors as well. And you're getting a little bit of back and forth about like, people, the history of the building. It's a historical building of some sort. I think they mentioned the Black Dahlia she lived in one of the apartments where the owner, where he lives, or the guy who runs the building. It's just like you get, and these are what I would think are like stereotypical characters in a slasher film, but you're getting some at least brief glimpses of characterization. And weird shit starts happening throughout the apartment, I guess. I think it's the first kill of the maybe it's not the first kill. The first kill that I remember is this weird nail gun kill.
The first one was Sherry Moon getting clawed by a hammer.
Yes, okay.
Sherry Moon, we gotta note that. What the fuck? I've never seen her in anything that's not Rob Zombie.
Rob Zombie, yeah. And I think she did this as a favor to Toby Hooper.
Is she known at this point?
I don't know. Let me see.
This is one thing I don't like. People like pick on Rob Zombie about putting his wife in his movies. Like, and I don't know about you. I think she's like kind of like,
she's fine.
Yeah, like if you don't like his movies, I don't think she's the problem with it.
No.
I like his movies. Problem, and I like her.
The problem with his movies is Rob Zombie. Like when they're bad, it's because of him.
It's not because of her. It's not because of her. She's like, fine.
This is her second film. She was in a House of a Thousand Corpses the year before.
Okay.
So I guess she's already at this point married to Rob Zombie. I guess they probably, that makes sense.
Probably both fans of Hooper. And,
yeah, like Rob Zombie, huge horror fan himself. So that probably checks out. I don't know why my notes here don't have that. I'm kind of like looking at the plot line here and I'm drawing a blank on it for some reason. People start getting killed and the new person in the apartment, she starts like, this shit's weird. Like, you know, she hears like fighting next door between like her neighbor and her boyfriend. Like, and then there's some like fun stuff there. Like you hear the fight and then like a couple scenes later, you hear them fucking.
Thin walls.
Yes. Like you get the impression that she can hear stuff. Like that, you know that she can, which leads up to when she does hear like some shit going down, she calls the cops and they come in, they bust through they don't bust through, but they get the superintendent to open the door and they go and check out the apartment and there's nothing in there. And that's because the murderer has nail gunned the person to the ceiling. It's fun that entire sequence. So the entire sequence of the girl being attacked in her apartment, while their neighbor's listening, it is super goofy. Like he has the nail gun and he's like shooting it, and it's like hitting her nightgown, stapling her to the wall.
That'll work, right?
Huh?
I said that'll work, right?
Right, like, and he has such perfect aim.
Well, even then, it's like, couldn't you just run and rip the fucking...
Right, like, I mean, he's only done one, and she's just sitting there screaming, and then he, like, that's another one. But he's not hitting her, just her.
Yeah, he's, like, pinning her.
It's so stupid.
Yeah.
And then what, like, these cops are terrible, like, not surprising, like, cops in horror films are often not the most observant motherfuckers on the planet, but you would think you'd notice like some nail holes in the wall or that there's a person hanging from the ceiling. Really dumb.
Yeah.
But they play it off like, oh, you know, she's not here. You heard shit. So they make her start questioning herself. And that becomes a recurring theme because then she makes another call when somebody else is missing and they're like, you got to stop doing this. You can't keep calling the cops on us. Actually, I think the first time she calls, it's because she's hearing somebody get, she thinks somebody's getting murdered, but it's actually somebody doing a line read. I think that's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then second call was this one.
I called what it was going to be. Because my wife, she had to sit through this too. I said to her, I'm like, it would be funny if they're just like it was people fucking or no, you know what I said it was? I thought it was going to be like someone had their TV on loud.
Yeah.
But it was even funnier because it was people, it was like wannabe actors in LA, you know, doing line readings.
Yeah. So it's a funny little, like, you know, it's a funny little gag that they
It's do. Also like, it's one of those things you could predict as it's about to happen. You're like, yeah, it's not going to be, you know, this is what it's going
to
be.
And we're too early in the film for like shit to start going super south. But we need to set up her as the one that actually understands what's happening, but also
nobody's
going to believe her.
Yeah.
So yeah, so when she calls about the actual murder with the nail gun, they're not taking her seriously. They're not looking around. They're not noticing the nail holes or the person stapled to the wall. And now they're not paying any attention to her. So she can't call the cops anymore because they think she's a kook. And when she finally does find an actual murder, shit's gone really kind of south with her. So she starts investigating everything on her own, and she starts, seeing that there's secret passageways in the apartment, and there are symbols and stuff. But she starts investigating all that. It gets really weird. Like, there's spells, and the murderer is some sort of evil spirit that has been, a curse has been placed on it, and it haunts the walls and the hallways of this apartment building.
There's a lot of time spent on all of this, like this is kind of the whole movie, and like,
yeah,
what is it? What is going on? And like, when they explain it, I'm like, it's not explained. Like, I'm just like, okay, so.
Oh, yeah, not at all.
No. You know what I mean? Like they give an explanation, but it's so glib and half-assed that you're like, what? Like, there was a guy who was building the building, and he was into some cult shit, so there's now this guy, I don't want to jump ahead.
Yeah.
But, like, do you get what I'm saying? Like, it's not like.
Yes, they don't explain it.
Like, it's what not... is it? Like, what is this guy? Where did he come from?
Exactly. And then normally in a film like this, like you get that whole research thing, and like it starts to piece together. It's like all those hints are there earlier on.
This gets like 60% of the way there, and then just leaves it, the puzzle undone.
It's like, this is why it's not even that the puzzle's on. They don't set the puzzle for us. Like, they just give us the answer. This is what happened. It's like, but it doesn't make any sense.
Let's just say it. They're like, this guy is a coffin baby. And I'm like, what does that mean? Like, do you know what that means?
No.
I don't get it. The guy was, the owner of the building that built the building was into weird cult shit. And then because of that, somehow there's a coffin baby in the, like, I don't, okay, what is a coffin baby?
Yeah, they don't explain what that is. It's just like, oh, that sounds cool, right? No,
like, no, it needed like a line or two more at least to just be like, he did this and like he was doing some ritual and just what the fuck are we talking about here? I don't have any bearings.
And up until then, like, we don't really know that, like, we don't really know who the killer is. So they keep kind of pointing towards it being the handyman. Like, he's a weirdo.
Like, this is another another hacky fucking thing in this. The look of that maintenance guy.
Yeah.
It just, you know what I'm saying? It's just
he just looks a little off. Like,
oh, this guy, he's got hair in his eyes. Like, fucking, and he acts weird. It's just like one of those super hacky horror tropes.
Yeah.
He sucks. That character sucks, dude. Like, give him some humanity and you don't have to make him like so weird. I don't know. Like,
yeah, he's not a character. He's just like, he's just a caricature movie
that I did not hate.
There's a lot of dumb stuff in it.
Yeah.
Also, there's a lot of dumb stuff that's kind of fun. Like,
sure. Yeah. And also, like, there's actors in this I like. And, like, the main girl, Angela Bettis, is kind of like a minor scream queen. Like, people like her. Like, she's in that movie May from way back 20 years ago.
I remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think this is a very good movie. I think it's infinitely more watchable than the Toolbox Murders. But it is just like also super, it's like super cliche horror.
Yeah. No, I'm with you.
Coming from Toby Hooper is like kind of disappointing.
All right, can we get into that now? Because like I something I want to say about that, which is Tobe Hooper, in my opinion, is like a super underrated director. Even if all he ever did in his entire career was make the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, he made one of the most unnerving movies of all time.
Yep.
But guess what? Tobe Hooper also did The Funhouse. He did fucking Poltergeist.
Yep.
He did Life Force. Super underrated, and then he just got shit on worse than John Carpenter. And watching this, there's like very actually there is something about this that reminds me of him, but like I'm just like, this just feels like him doing journeyman work. Like, what is this? Like, did he want to make this? I feel like he was just hired to make it and just said, okay, whatever. Like,
which
it's a job.
And I haven't seen it. So his last movie was a film called Jin from 2013. But that, like, when I read up on that movie, that was exactly what it was. He was just like, he was hired by somebody to make this movie.
He's director for hire, which is, that's, again, it's so kind of sad because he, dude, even Texas Chainsaw 2, man, love it or hate it, it was like something, right?
Yeah, Texas Chainsaw 2, Invaders from Mars, like, the Mangler, like, I don't love the Mangler, but still good, like, a decent Stephen King movie. This is a weird fucking movie. Like, the fact that he is, like, attached to this thing that is so generic.
It's, yeah. Yeah.
And really, like, as you said, like, you look through his filmography up until this point, and I've never seen Crocodile, so I don't know
what that movie is.
But everything else is, like, you know, there's some, like, something original about it all. Like,
yeah. Even
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which you mentioned, like, I don't love that movie, but it's like just so completely different than the original Texas Chainsaw. It's
bonkers. Yeah, it was like him being like, what could I do different? Like, if I got to redo this, what would be different? And like, I don't love it, but I don't hate it either. I think it's pretty decent. Like, I dig it. Like, there's parts of that are ultra scary. But like,
and like Toolbox Murders is just like, like, that could, you could have told me it was anybody, and like,
yes, you could tell me it was
never had a career, and like, yes, this is a movie. Yes. And it's like, yeah, you could tell me
this is the one movie that this guy made, and I would have been like, yeah, that tracks. Like, he's probably a real estate agent now, yep, or something. Like, yeah.
And instead, like, this has a name horror guy attached to it, and it's just so fucking generic.
It's so anonymous.
Yeah, it's just a disappointment coming from him, but. I'm gonna throw this butt out there, but when paired to the original fucking movie, it's
no, I agree. And the other thing I will add is that, like, when the character is revealed, like, who the killer is, it did remind me of The Funhouse.
Okay.
Because they had a killer that was walking around with this Frankenstein mask, and then when you see what it is, he's like a monster, he's like a freak. But there you get like a little better backstory of like how he came to be.
Yeah.
As opposed as just saying he's Coffin Baby. But like that, like just that idea feels like something, like, just because I've seen The Funhouse, I'm like, oh, you know, Hooper made that. I could see like something there. But that's about it. Like, yeah. Coming to that, I'm like, I don't know. It feels like a direct-to-video. It is a direct-to-video movie, I guess. But like,
yeah.
It feels like a direct-to-video movie from 10 years prior. Because, like, dude, think about it. This came out in what? What year?
2004.
All right. Right around the time this came out, I want you to think about, like, some of the stuff that was coming out.
I'm going to tell you what was out there. Like, so horror film-wise, we're talking Dawn of the Dead, the remake.
Uh-huh.
Saw.
I had that.
You had The Grudge. Creep, which was the train one. You have actual horror films.
Like, Texas Chainsaw Remake.
Oh, was that this year too? Holy shit.
28, not the same year, but like right in that wheelhouse. Texas Chainsaw Remake, 28 Days Later, Saw, The Devil's Rejects.
Yep.
Like, it makes sense to me why no one gives a fuck about this movie and why it went straight to video, because it feels like a fucking straight to video movie from 1995 as opposed to like a new big movie from 2004. Like, it's just.
Yeah. I do wonder if maybe like somebody was like, hey, we're going to release this. And they were like, we can't. No, like, this is just not. We cannot do that.
It's fine. It's you wouldn't want to waste the distribution and marketing budget on it and just, you know, put it on video. It'll make its money there. And I'm sure it did, you know.
Yeah, I can't imagine that the budget was super big. I don't have any numbers on that, but yeah, what a weird fucking film. And they here's a little thing at the bottom of the Wikipedia page. There was a sequel to this movie that was produced
a decade later,
and it was called Coffin Baby.
It's called Coffin Baby. You might see it on, I think I saw it on Tubi or something, as Toolbox Murders 2. So like, yes. you can see both variations on the title. Supposedly just not good at all, like avoided completely.
Yeah, so I saw, I think it was on Tubi, that I saw Toolbox Murders 2.
That's like, Coffin Baby.
And I watched the trailer for it. I was like, oh, this is bad. Like these are amateur actors. the sound design is terrible. Like, you could tell just by watching the trailer. It was like super, super low budget. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't have much more to say. Like, we didn't really talk about it, but when she goes in, you know, she's exploring she finds all these hidden areas. I did find that kind of fun, like where they're, you know,
going
around and like the secret areas of the apartment. That stuff was fun, but as we said, it's all generic. Like, we've seen this, that type of stuff in other horror films, in better horror films. And yeah, I think you're right. Like, maybe if this was 1994, 1995, it would still be direct-to-video, but maybe
you might appreciate it more as that. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yo, look, like, this is a weird thing. But like, when you look at Tobe Hooper's output,
it's just near the bottom.
Yeah. And like, you know, in 1993 and 1995, he did Night Terrors and The Mangler. Like, not great movies, but better than this. So,
yeah.
And it that would have been, and
everything he did in the 80s, I think, is great.
Yeah. And way better than this. It's just a disappointing, like, for hire movie, it seems. All right, final rating, Jeff, for Toolbox Murders by Tobe Hooper.
I think, like you, coming off of the original, this is like way more competent and like watchable.
Yeah.
There's also elements of this I actually do like. Like, I do like the idea of a horror movie set in an apartment building where you get to like know all these different people living in different apartments, which this does do.
Yeah,
it does well enough that like, you like, there's the kid that's like watching webcams of his neighbor, like he hacked into her web, like, you know, there's like characters, right?
Yep.
And that's like one thing, like Evil Dead Rise recently, like everyone loved. Like, I thought that was the thing that like was lacking in that. Like, you set it in an apartment building, and it felt like I didn't get to see the apartment building. I didn't get to see the neighbors. Like, I didn't know anybody except the people in this one apartment. What's the point of doing it in this apartment high rise if you're not going to like use that? And so like, I think that like that part of this I liked. And I also liked, I'm a sucker for this. I've had, just because ever since I was a little kid, I was a sucker for it. People under the stairs.
Yeah.
The hidden like trap doors and the fucking like, there's secret passages that where you could go through the walls and stuff like that.
That's in this. And I love that. I don't know why. I'm just like weird and I think that's neat. Like ever since I was a little kid, I was like the idea of like crawl spaces and you know what I mean? Like stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things I think are good. I think it's like competent enough, but the movie is just so okay. It's just so down the middle. And so I am down the middle. It's a 5 out of 10.
Yeah. We are. It might be the first. We are hitting the exact same scores on both of these films. I'm also a 5 for very much the exact same reasons. It is far more watchable than the other. If you're like, hey, you have to watch one of these toolbox murder movies, I'm gonna pick this one. But I don't see myself ever revisiting this. Unless like I'm forced to. So
no, I'm not. I won't be revisiting either of these. I'm happy to have seen them because I've always been curious about them. Like I don't always meant to watch them, but
yeah, you know, that's fun. I mean, that's kind of what we do here with this show. And I really, you know, having heard like, oh, the Toolbox Murders is this cult classic, and you know, and then Tobe Hooper remade it, and to just see the output here, I'm glad we did it. But man, like. These are two disappointing movies. But it seems like Tobe Hooper's Toolbox Murders wins unanimously from us. Was there a poll this?
Yeah, I got one vote and then went for the other one.
Oh, but, well, you're wrong.
We win. Yeah, we win single person out there.
And I don't recommend anybody go watch these either. So what do we got for our next go round? Jeff.
We're going to do, keeping with my theme this year of not really doing horror.
Okay.
You're holding down the fort, though, with the horror. We're going to do two thrillers about the evil within.
Okay.
I don't want to expand on that too much because I feel like if I talk too much about it, it'll be a spoiler. But, like, I do love movies that are, like, you would do evil shit. Like that's kind of like one of my favorite type of movies. Best example of that is, have you ever seen the movie A Simple Plan with Bill Paxton?
I have, yes.
Okay. That's like one of my favorite examples. I thought about putting that in like assigning that, but I was like,
doing that. Yeah.
It's not fair because for that movie, let's say we reviewed that movie. That would be our second 10 out of 10 for me. Like it's a 10. It's a 10 for me.
Got it.
But I'm doing two movies in that vein, okay? So we're going to do, from 1975, a movie called Sudden Fury.
Sudden Fury.
And that movie is, like, available on some app called Plex.
Okay.
If you have trouble finding it, though, it is available on, like, YouTube. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, that route. It's out there. If you have trouble, I could swap it out with a different movie. But I think it is. I know I'll be able to watch it because I own the Blu-ray of it.
Okay.
But if not, let me know. And the second movie we're gonna do is from this year, like a few weeks ago, and that's called The Last Stop in Yuma County.
Oh no! You're making me watch a Western.
No, it's not a Western.
Okay. All right. Here we go.
I guess it sounds like a Western.
Sounds like a Western.
I mean, there's Western elements, I guess. It's in the West.
I mean, what was that? Was it 310 to Yuma?
Yeah, no, it has no connection. Yeah, no. This is just a thriller.
Okay.
Yeah, they're both thrillers about what would you do in this situation. And yeah, I think it'll be fun.
Okay, so Sudden Fury from 1975 and The Last Stop in Yuma County from this year.
Which you will have to rent.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think it's decent price rental. I bought it for $15 and I'm happy I did because one, I have to watch it again now. But two, I'm happy to watch it again.
All right, so we'll be watching both of those for our July episode. Join us then.
Yeah, it'll be fun.